Tatarstan and its capital Kazan are a crossroads where religions and peoples meet, where modern-day life is deeply enriched by the past, and where the lines between legend and history become blurred. So let's go and explore. Leonid, nice to meet you. I see that Tatarstan is a real vibrant patchwork of peoples and religions.
True. It's a remarkable place. It's the meeting point of the Volga and the Kama, the biggest rivers of the European part of Russia, and ancient trade routes used to traverse this region. That's why Turkic, Slavic and Finno-Ugric peoples lived here side by side, which also meant a close contact between farmers and nomads. It was a frontier of sorts, hence the patchwork of different cultures. Islam was adopted by local peoples very early on, back in the 10th century. Christianity has very deep roots here as well. Remnants of paganism also survived. So it's a crossroads of many cultures and a dialogue between them. Despite their different worldviews, different ways of life, people around here have an established tradition of settling their differences amicably. Here on the plains, there's no alternative. It's not like in the mountains, where you can hide behind the next mountain. That's why people here are open. Tatarstan can set an example of how dialogue can be established, especially since this is ever important today, in the 21st century. Just look at what's going on in the world.
Of course. And is it true that there are more than 100 nationalities here?
Yes, there are more than 100 nationalities. People have been coming here from all over our vast country, which is a plus. We're very diverse.
So we have this wonderful cathedral here, and just behind us we have this mosque. They're practically next to each other. Was this on purpose?
Churches and mosques have been built next to each other around here for centuries. Our main temples are located inside the Kremlin. It's the Annunciation Cathedral and the famous Kul Sharif Mosque, built in 2005. As a symbol of unity and mutual understanding, our Muslim folk congratulate their Christian neighbors on important Christian holidays and the other way around. This is typical. We've been living in peace and harmony for many centuries now.
Seems like a really great example how people from different cultural backgrounds can live together in peace.
Yes, and that despite different historical backgrounds. We've lived as neighbors for five centuries after all. There are many regions in the world where Islam and Christianity share the same space, but these are usually marked by unrest, like the Balkans or the Caucasus. They have all these conflicts flaring up every now and then. Tatarstan, however, can be a role model in this regard. We bring up our children from a very early age in an atmosphere of respect for each other. They go to the same schools, where they sit side by side in their classrooms. Respect needs to be taught at a very early stage. I'm talking about tolerance and respect for other cultures.
Now let's meet a music band like no other. Four women from different nationalities united in a single group that embodies the diversity of Tatarstan. Ladies, lovely to meet you. Now, you call yourselves Zakaria. What does it mean?
Our group is called Zakaria for a reason. There's a song called Karya Zakaria, which many of our peoples know and sing, including the Tatars, the Chuvash, the Mordvins, the Udmurt, etc. So we chose this name, which actually means one who unites.
Okay, well, that's a very perfect name for your group. What languages do you sing in, and what are the songs you sing about?
We just sang a song in five languages for you. We recorded this song during our ethnographic expeditions. We sing songs in 9 languages that are used by the peoples of Tatarstan and beyond.
Amazing. Now, you sing in different languages, you're from different cultures. Where are your songs from?
We learned how to travel across the region in search of folk songs. We visited remote villages and collected folklore, traditional songs, tunes. So this is where our material comes from.
So you're also preserving them?
Of course. We try to preserve deep-rooted old elements embedded in these songs, even as we reinterpret them for modern listeners.
Mm-hmm. Now let's talk a little bit about your dress. It looks quite modern, but with a traditional twist. Tell me about what you're wearing.
As you can see, our dresses have a modern cut. We came up with these designs ourselves to go with the songs that we rearranged. Yet, there are traditional designs in our aprons. But our art started out with what we call pure tradition. We would pull our grandma's dresses, shirts, and aprons from old trunks and wear them.
We all have different ethnicities, and these aprons showcase patterns typical for our native peoples. Mine has Mishar Tatar designs, Adele's has Bashkir elements, Masha's Mordvinian, and Sophia's Udmurt designs.
But you're all wearing very distinctive necklaces as well. Can you tell me what are they made of, and is there any symbolism behind them?
As you can see, they're made of ordinary coins.
They are protective charms.
First and foremost, these are charms against evil spirits. In many cultures, a girl is first heard, then seen, like we usually say.
It jingles.
We are always jingling. One more thing to note is that these ornaments are also rooted in different cultures. Every ethnicity in Tatarstan has something like it.
Each of our ethnicities has their own kind of necklace that is unique. But for our modern look, we've chosen some universal motifs that are shared by all. Mm-hmm. All peoples had coins like these, so these necklaces are a more modern interpretation.
Mm-hmm. Well, ladies, thanks so much for telling me about your group, Zakaria. It's been lovely to meet you. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Uniting different peoples, cultures, and traditions is something that Kazan is pretty good at.
And this could not be more true of this place, the temple of all religions.
So this place has been under construction for 50 years now. Who's behind such an ambitious project, and who's it for?
It was my parents' house, so me and my brother, we just continued our father's work. He used to dream about building a mosque, and we've taken it a step further. The idea was to create a synthesis of cultures and religions, not to juxtapose them. I think that we've been able to achieve this because a lot of people come to this place and they bring their children too. This, for example, is my tribute to Japanese culture. Great artists like Van Gogh and Gauguin admired the works of Kokusai, Hiroshige, and Utomaro. And this Japanese pagoda is my token of respect for Japanese culture.
Now, it's called a temple, the temple of all religions, but it's also a cultural center as well. What can visitors find here? What can they do?
It's true that it's not really a temple. Our visitors gave it that name. The idea was to create a cultural center. Here you can learn about art, first of all. We pay tribute to the works of great artists like Giotto, Masaccio. You can find icon painting here and many other techniques.
Can you show me some of the halls inside, please?
We need to go this way. The hall dedicated to Egypt is especially precious for me.
And you made all this?
Yes. Yes, everything. And again, here, it's a synthesis of cultures. Of course, there were no mosaics in ancient Egypt, but this is how we interpreted it.
How long did it take you to make this?
Nobody knows how long it took Mozart or Beethoven to write their music, and it took Paganini seconds to play it on his violin.
And which room's this?
We're in the Hall of Tatar Beauties. This is the Tatar princess, Soyumbike, who lived 500 years ago. As the legend goes, she jumped off the top of a tower and shattered into 40 Tatar beauties. These paintings are allegorical images of our mothers, sisters, wives, and daughters.
So how do you manage to bring together so many different religions in one place?
We only have one planet Earth, so I wanted people to take a moment to wonder about who we are, where we come from, and what our purpose is. That's the idea behind this hall, to get people to think.
Leonid, Kazan is over 1,000 years old, and there are a number of stories surrounding how the name of the city and the city itself emerged. What do locals tell people, or does it depend who you ask?
Kazan is a very old city, and legends play an important role here. They're woven into the fabric of city life. One legend that we love to tell our visitors has to do with the founding of Kazan. Upon coming to these lands, so the legend goes, the first Khan consulted a sorcerer, who told him to pour water into a cauldron and build a city at a place where the water would boil. The sorcerer also instructed the Khan to sacrifice the first man his party would meet and lay his body in the foundations of the new city if he wanted it to be strong and lasting. They did find a place where water was boiling, and so they started laying the foundations. But the first person they met was the Khan's own son. They realized it was the boy who was supposed to be offered as a sacrifice, but they didn't dare to kill him. When the Khan learned about that, he rejoiced, but consulted the priests again. They said even though the city would often be captured by enemies, it would still endure. This is how this old legend goes. And, as you noticed, it has to do with a boiling pot. Kazan actually means a pot that Turkic peoples would take with them on their travels in the old days. Every time before making camp, they would cook food in copper kazans first. Ancient kazans are still found around Tatarstan, even Hunnic kazans from the 4th century AD. So the image of Kazan as a boiling pot of different cultures comes to mind. It's a kind of metaphor.
Talking about legends, Leonid, they have it that Zilant, a dragon, and a winged leopard protect this city. Why these creatures?
Zilant is one of our unique symbols. It's not clear where it was borrowed from. Could be from China, but it clearly has an Eastern origin. Unlike Western dragons, who symbolize treachery and are supposed to be slain by knights who say princesses, our dragon has positive connotations. It's a serpent dragon who initially lived on the mountain where the Kremlin stands today. According to legend, he would come down here to Lake Kaban to drink water. There are just a few places with this kind of a symbol around the world. One is a town in Ireland, another one in France. Our ancestors supposedly befriended this dragon. He's not seen in a negative light. Where exactly they negotiated with him is still unclear, though. This is a topic for another legend, I guess.
Yes, I think that's the only way.
The never-ending diversity of Tatarstan has led us to this village, where we'll meet another ethnic group, the Kriashans. There's only a few of them left, so they guard their traditions fiercely.
Alisa, there's some confusion to this day as to who the Kriashan people are. Now, you've told me about christened Tatars, and the word Kriashan comes from Krishenia, which is the Russian to christen someone. But the Kriashan people are different. Can you clear this up for me?
We're a Turkic people who are Orthodox Christians. A long time ago, we were pagans, and there are still many pagan elements in our everyday life. After paganism, we converted to Russian Orthodox Christianity. Christian Tatars are a group that emerged after Ivan the Terrible captured and christened Kazan. But Krashens are different. We're a separate ethnicity with our own way of life, our own folklore, and even our own worldview.
Now, you've just said that paganism is part of your culture. How does it manifest itself today?
People in villages often make sacrifices to our Mother Earth at the end of the planting season, especially around Pentecost. There are many customs and traditions that have become intertwined with Christian elements. We have a holiday called Petrau, where our women gather herbs, which are used for medicinal purposes throughout the year. We also have many sacred numbers, which feature prominently in everyday life. I mentioned gathering herbs. It's supposed to be 40 herbs, or, for example, 40 days after someone's birth or death are very important dates. Talking about customs, we fire up the traditional sauna on the last Wednesday before Easter to honor our dead relatives. People even leave new towels, new soap, new sponges, etc. in the bathhouse so that their deceased relatives can come and take a bath and continue to protect their families.
Well, certainly quite a few customs there. Elisa, how important is song and dance as part of your culture? Is it true that you can communicate with each other through song?
We always do that on a specific occasion for a special reason. When we invite guests, we put on our best clothes and entertain them with our best food and best songs. And there's a song for every occasion. What's interesting about Krashen customs is that not only the hosts, but also the guests sing their parts. It's like a song battle, if you will.
Okay.
One party has sung its piece praising the other party, and the other party sings back to you, extolling your virtues. This could have a freestyle format, where people make up their songs as they go.
Really?
We used to do that not only when having guests over, but at any event, like a wedding. The same goes for dancing. Krashens don't dance just like that for no reason. I'm talking about traditional dances, of course. It's always part of a ritual meant to attract good luck, good fortune, or something else.
Well, I'm intrigued by these Krashen rituals, Elisa. Can you show me one, please?
Certainly.
Excellent. Elisa, there was certainly a lot going on there. There was singing, there was dancing, there was food. Can you walk me through what we just saw, please?
What we saw was one of our wedding customs, where the groom's party visited the bride's party. They met at the gate, and each side sang praises of the other party. They praised the bride, they praised the groom. It was like a song battle. There was a song about the bride being so beautiful and smart and a great housekeeper. And the same thing about the groom. What a great guy he is, what a fine couple they would make. So can we please have your bride? When we went into the courtyard, we saw both parties presenting certain dishes to one another. For example, a pair of geese symbolized the newlyweds and was meant to bring luck and good fortune to their family home. What we saw next was both parties testing each other, as it were. They traded jokes, looking to see if the other party would catch their meaning. The purpose is to get a better idea of who our would-be in-laws are, and if we can live with them.
And what else happens at Krashen weddings?
Once all the guests have arrived and sung their songs and everyone is seated at the table, the time comes to test the groom's prowess. They put a shirt on him with one sleeve tied in a knot, and he must untie the knot with one hand. If he can do it, he's supposed to be a smart and capable fellow. So this was a way to learn more about him.
And if he can't do it?
They'll draw their own conclusions. Maybe he isn't a great match after all. But this is a way to test his skill. There is another tradition which I find very beautiful, where they put on a scarf like this one on the bride. It's called Tugarik Yaulyuk, or a round scarf. There is a magic charm hidden inside the scarf. You see a cross on the outer side, which is also an important symbol. But the main part is hidden from view. The embroidery is done on the inside. This embroidery is round, like our Mother Earth. The Earth, with its four corners, is meant to protect the wearer and bring her everything she needs for a prosperous and happy life.
Wonderful. Alisa, thank you very much for telling me about the beliefs, customs and traditions of the Croatian people. Leonid, we've talked a lot about the mix of cultures and traditions here in Kazan. And I can see from here, Leonid, that the city's developing, there's construction, there's a lot going on.
Kazan is very future-oriented. We keep thinking ahead. We remember the past, but we live with future generations in mind. And it's developing right before our eyes. Just 10 years ago, you wouldn't have seen any of this. The city has been growing rapidly. Kazan has changed dramatically over the last decade. We hardly recognize our city anymore. But we're very excited about these developments. We don't want to leave or go anywhere else. We want to stay here, and we want our children and grandchildren to live here as well. We're happy where we are.
Certainly see it. Leonid, thank you very much for telling me all about Kazan.
Kazan's ornate buildings, churches and mosques really make for a pretty picture, but it's the people we've met, their songs and the stories that they've told us that really add the colour to this unique and enchanting place.